Happy Sabbath, everyone. Hope you're enjoying this cooler weather. I know I am. Man, I'm trying to get situated up here. Set my timer so I don't go over. So, welcome to all the visitors. I guess specifically I would say my family, since they're visiting from Kentucky, Paducah, Kentucky, and my sister from Huntsville, my brother from Auburn. And my dad took a few days off work for a change, spent some vacation time with us in Atlanta here at the house. We got to float the Chattahoochee and go look at a museum, do some fun things. A year ago, my wife and I bought a house nearby. It happens to be in a historical Civil War campground and battleground. So we live in Vinings, just above the river, below Mount Wilkinson. It's the highest point inside the perimeter of 285. So it's where Sherman camped out with an army of 100,000 men, cleared all the trees, and from Mount Wilkinson, he had a good vantage point to plan and prepare for the Battle of Atlanta, and then to view it as his soldiers executed it. Now, there was 100,000 men. Currently, the census in Vinings is 10,000 people. So imagine, as crowded as it is now, there were 10 times that many fellas running around, camping in our backyard, walking down the front of our street there. So when Mike Estes found out that we bought a house there, he got pretty excited. He's a big-time historian. If you've ever visited him, he's got an office with all kinds of books and artifacts. He's dedicated part of his life towards the knowledge of history, and specifically the Civil War. So when he found out, he was excited to bring his metal detector over. In fact, he brought three because he thought that we'd be able to find some artifacts in the backyard. So I'd say within 15 minutes we go out back. After I spent probably a month in the evenings and weekends clearing all the underbrush and the English ivy and hauling off all the debris, we hauled off probably four or five dumpsters full so that we could get down to the dirt. And we were careful not to disturb it with the bobcat, because if you cut and fill too much, then you're not going to be able to find any of these bullets or belt buckles or what have you. So Mike, within 15 minutes, is already on his first find. And he's down on his hands and he's digging. And we spent the rest of the day, and my wife and I and one of my guys, we could barely find anything. You know, the machine's beeping, all different tones. Mike can figure out, he knows if it's a penny or a quarter or a bullet. I mean, he's got a real skill for it. So Bridget's grandfather loaned me his metal detector recently. So my dad and I tried it out this week. We found a lot of stuff. I mean, it was all trash. At one point, he's really digging for about 20 minutes, and it's just going off. It's beeping, it's beeping, it's beeping. I said, "Dad, get out of the way. Let me try that." And somehow I hit a piece of metal, and I said, "Oh, we've got a big one here. This is huge." It was about this big. We pulled it up, and it was a hubcap. So we weren't very successful in finding our own artifacts, so we decided to go on down the road about 10 minutes to the Atlanta History Museum. It's there on West Paces Ferry. They've got about 33 acres of gardens. So I've lived here for 10 years and never been to that museum, but it's amazing what all they've got. They've got the Swan House, which is a big mansion. They've got they've transplanted several log cabins, a blacksmith shop, historical homes that were predated from the Civil War. They've got actors out there that will do reenactments of the Civil War and history. They've got livestock, sheep and chickens, and they've got gardens for vegetables. It's a great experience, really, for the whole family. Indoors, they've got indoor exhibits. You can rent a pair of headphones and go around to all the exhibits, and they have numbers that you punch in, and they'll tell you stories. So they basically tell the story of the Civil War and the history of the Battle of Atlanta through the audio. Most of which was donated. And the reason I'm talking about this, you all probably know, this is the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Atlanta. So it's all over the newspaper and magazines, and there's a lot of events taking place every day this week. We haven't had a chance to go to any reenactments, but I do think it'd be interesting. So, touring that museum really hit home what a terrible, destructive battle our country fought, brother against brother, split families apart. My great-great-great-grandfather Montgomery, for example, fought for the Confederates. He's from Mississippi. He had his leg shot clean off by a cannon. Most guys, you know, that got shot, they got their legs amputated if his was just shot off. He's buried over in the family cemetery, Old Bethel, in northeast Mississippi. So whether it was a Union soldier or Confederate, when they left their home to fight, they knew they were risking life and limb. They both sacrificed a great deal for their own ideals. So they bit the bullet literally and proverbially. And this got me to thinking about the expression, bite the bullet. I'm sure you've all heard it. I brought some of what we found in the back. What I should say, some of what Mike found, and I dug. I was the laborer; he was the teacher. These are some of the artifacts we found, among others, too large to bring, horseshoes and whatnot. So, does anyone know where this expression comes from? To bite the bullet. Of course, Brentwood. Brent is a walking encyclopedia. He is one of the most well-read guys. So there's several theories on it. So I looked up the history of the etymology of the expression. It was first seen in print. It was first written by Rudyard Kipling in 1891 in a novel. But to bite the bullet basically means to endure a painful or otherwise unpleasant situation that is seen as unavoidable. It's also mentioned as the practice of having a patient or soldier clench a bullet in his teeth as a way to cope with the extreme pain of a surgical procedure without anesthetic on the battlefield. Another version is, during the Civil War, they had black powder guns. I've got a couple myself. I've never shot them, but I have them in case I want to. I need to learn how. Each bullet came wrapped in a paper cartridge with gunpowder inside as well. The standard method for loading the gun was to tear the back end of the paper cartridge off with the teeth, spill powder into the barrel in haste, and cram the whole thing in paper and all. So I saw a bunch of these at the museum. I swiped one. I'm kidding. It's one from my backyard. This is basic paper. So before everybody is too alarmed, I should say, I didn't bring a real gun. Okay, I brought a prop. This is a piece of wood. You can all see it's a piece of wood. There's no barrel. There's no hammer. There's no trigger. It's harmless. We live in a day and age where people see a gun and he's got a gun. Everybody gets scared. This is actually, I didn't have a Civil War gun, so I brought one designed in the 1880s after the Civil War. But it is truly an antique. So basically the soldier would take the gun, the rifle in one hand. He would bite the bullet. Okay. He'd pour the powder in this way. Shouldn't eat this paper. Doesn't taste good. Okay. Then he would go ahead and put the paper down the barrel. And then the bullet, of course, then he'd ram it home. Okay. Forgive me, I don't have any real practice at this. I'm still learning how to bite the bullet. Okay. Once it's rammed, then he's ready to fire. Of course, the other version is to literally just bite the bullet during surgery, right? So I thought I'd bring that prop for the kids. Maybe they'll remember this message My dad used to use props growing up. I think they can be entertaining. So, we as Christians, we're called in our life to bite the bullet as well. The consequences of taking the easy way in our lives has serious ramifications. We have the choice to take the easy way out or to bite the bullet, and as Christ says, his version of this expression would be to take up our cross. Let's turn quickly to Luke 9:23. Please turn to Luke 9:23. And it reads, "Then he said to them all, if anyone desires to come up after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it." So there are many examples of God's people and his disciples facing challenges head on. There's people in this room that could tell their stories of hard decisions they've made. Some of these made a conscious decision to take the hard road, the more arduous road, the more painful road for the sake of honoring God. For the sake of time, I will only mention one today. Please turn again now to Hebrews 11:24. Hebrews 11:24. We're going to talk about Moses. He's a good example. Hebrews 11:24. "By faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of a Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he looked upwards towards the reward." This reward is also mentioned in Philippians 3:14. "I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." You don't have to turn here for the sake of time, but I'll mention to verify the authority here. Moses in Acts 7:22 is mentioned. Acts 7:22. "Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians." It says all. "And he was mighty in words and deeds." So basically we know he spent the first 40 years in Egypt before fleeing to the wilderness to learn to become a shepherd. He spent the first 40 years in Egypt in the most advanced civilization of the world. They had, at that time, it was the modern day, you know, United States. They had the best. They knew math. They knew geometry. They were architectural masters. They built things, for example, the pyramids that we couldn't even dream to build today with modern cranes and modern technology. We still don't know how they did it. They also had they were heavily supported through their agriculture. So when you're able to take the time to build buildings to house people and agriculture in the Nile Valley, then you've got times of peace where you can create enough population where you can start an army. That's one problem that the Vikings, for example, had. They were a fierce people, but they never had the access to gardens and agriculture, so they never grew to be a really mighty people. But basically, he knew all things Egyptian. He had it made in the shade in Egypt. He could have stayed there and lived out his life in the comfort of grand palaces, with all the entertainment and music and women, whatever he wants, and abundance of food and wine that Egypt had to offer. But instead, he made a hard decision. He left it all. Instead, he chose to bite the bullet and take up with his people, his native people, the Hebrews. So he spent 40 years in Egypt and 40 in the wilderness, and this 80 years of preparation led him to his final calling, which is to bring God's people out of Egypt. So we are called to a life of battle. We're Christian soldiers. We're taking the hard way out. This is a daily choice for us, whether we endure temporary trials in a day or a week or a month, or in general, you're just talking about the life of being a Christian. It's a long road. full of rewards, even in this life. This life has built-in rewards, but the ultimate is in the future. I was talking this morning, I mentioned even a life of sin has rewards. Moses could have taken the reward of overindulgence, staying in Egypt, and he would have had some temporary rewards, had a real good time. Like the prodigal son Paul Burns gave a sermon on recently. When he left his father, he had all that money, he had lots of rewards for a short period of time. But not ultimately. So how many people over the years have come to the knowledge of the truth? They've discovered that the Sabbath is valid, or they discover the holy days, but they just can't commit. They can't commit to giving up their career or putting pressure on their family or marriage, or can't give up Christmas or Easter. They can't give up their culture, their tradition, for God's culture. Culture is a big thing in our country. Because if you do go for God's way of life, you're going to suffer some amount of cultural persecution from your family, possibly from your friends, from your community, maybe from your school if you're a young person. So what's our commission? What's my point in all this? Bullets and, you know, civil war. Our commission, we are called by God to bite the bullet right now in this world. It's an individual commission and a collective commission as a church. Those of you in this room that have already chosen to commit your lives to God have already bitten the bullet. However, we know it's not over. It's still a continual process. It's a daily process. It's a daily decision to bite the bullet and live as a soldier for God. You can take confidence in knowing that God will protect us and be with you and me. I'll just reference Nahum chapter 1, verse 7. God inspired the prophet Nahum to write, "The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. And he knows those who trust in him." So he knows his people. You know, in the Battle of Atlanta, Sherman's army, over 100,000 strong, burned all but about 400 buildings, including homes and businesses. Some estimates of the number of buildings destroyed range from 3,200 to 5,000. In the four-month campaign, casualties totaled 37,000 Union soldiers and about 32,000 Confederate soldiers, killed, wounded, and missing. There were incredible catastrophes on either side. This battle was said to be the decisive turning point in the war, where the Confederate soldiers lost their will and their ability to continue to fight and prevail. At this point, they're fighting a defensive war. So let us not lose our will to fight. Let us follow God and continue to bite the bullet.